Hi, this is Kenny Kramer, the real Kramer, and you're listening to WGXC ACRA. And as Cosmo would say, giddy up.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, arthouse films, live music, and more, plus advance notice of close-up series conversations with directors and actors and other special events at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Saugerties, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org. That's upstatefilms.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of John Brigham and Susan Bell, Holyoke, Massachusetts. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
The international struggles of our world may lead to
nuclear holocaust.
To survive, you must have protection from radioactive fallout.
In the past, heavy equipment necessitated a long, costly operation for out-of-home shelter installation.
Today, Survive All basement-type shelters offer a combination steel and concrete do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Civil defense approved, Survive All offers maximum protection from fallout and falling debris, plus a basic equipment kit for family survival.
There's low initial cost and FHA approval. Nothing down in 5 years to pay.
For your family's protection, see a Survive All shelter today.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, June the 25th, 2024. I'm Mike Clifford. We head first to Arkansas, where leaders of some nonprofit organizations are not happy with a recent tax cut package passed by lawmakers there.
The law reduces the tax rate for people who make more than $25,000 a year. The corporate tax rate was also reduced from 4.8% to 4.3%. Opponents of the cuts say they only benefit the wealthy. Sayard Evans with Arkansas Coalition for Strong Families says elected officials aren't addressing issues that impact quality of life services for Arkansans, and they're concerned the cuts will impact programs.
Day in and day out, we face the challenges of people not having enough resources to meet their basic needs and to really live a legitimate quality of life that we want and expect for all of our citizens.
Supporters of the tax cut say Arkansas is expected to have a surplus of over $700 million annually, and community programs will not be affected. I'm Frieda Ross reporting.
The tax cut legislation does require almost $300 million be put aside in an emergency fund in case the money is needed to make up for any revenue shortfall. And next from CNN, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has agreed to plead guilty to a felony charge related to his alleged role in one of the largest U.S. government breaches of classified material as part of a deal with the Justice Department that will allow him to avoid imprisonment in the U.S. That's according to newly filed federal documents. CNN reports under the terms of the new agreement, Justice Department prosecutors will seek a 62-month sentence, which is equal to the amount of time Assange has served in a high-security prison in London while he fought extradition to the U.S. And cities such as Boulder that have been on the vanguard of climate policies are embracing carbon capture strategies to reach their zero emissions goals. We get more in the Smart Cities Dive, Solutions Journalism, Colorado News Connection, Collaboration.
Many projects are nature-based, such as reforestation, but governments are currently betting more than $220 billion taxpayer dollars on future tech-based capture tools. Will Burns with the Institute for Responsible Carbon Removal says local governments are uniquely positioned to learn what works, what doesn't, and what communities will accept and reject in their neighborhoods.
And communities can be that kind of workshop. Local communities and states have often been the laboratory, right, for national policy. So again, can they be in the context of carbon removal?
I'm Eric Galatis.
This is Public News Service.
As we approach this week's debate, President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump have different views on most issues, and student loan debt is no different.
In the Reno Sparks area, one nonprofit, the Black Community Collective, is in favor of what Biden's been doing to ease the burden of student loans. Edward Coleman is with the group and applauds the multiple student loan relief initiatives that Biden has introduced, most recently announcing nearly $8 billion in forgiveness for undergraduate student loan borrowers. Coleman says his own student debt was cut by three-fourths because of Biden's actions.
Just prior to that, you know, my thought was, well, I'll be paying this back forever. And now it's like, well, this will be paid off in, you know, a few years. And then what am I going to do?
For Coleman, he says the assistance will mean he can be more financially free. New data shows that about 18% of adults say student loan debt will have a major influence over their vote in the upcoming election. I'm Alex Gonzalez reporting.
Trump has called the Biden forgiveness plan vile and suggested that if he returns to the White House, those plans could get reversed. Meantime, Ohio lawmakers have introduced a groundbreaking proposal to make child care more affordable and accessible.
The bill proposes establishing a child care credit program, a cost-sharing model to make child care more affordable and accessible to families, employers, and child care providers. Reynolds notes the average annual cost of child care for an infant and a four-year-old exceeds the average annual rent in Ohio. She says the lack of child care access has far-reaching economic and social implications affecting child development, workforce retention, and overall economic growth.
It has become clear that urgent legislative action is needed to address the affordability and availability of childcare in Ohio.
She points out the high cost of childcare has become an overwhelming burden and financial strain for countless families and has forced many parents, especially mothers, to reduce their working hours or leave their job entirely. The bill allocates $10 million to kickstart the program. I'm Mark Richardson.
And finally, our Suzanne Parter lets us know June is World Ocean Month.
Advocates have been meeting with White House officials since last fall, making the case for an executive order to decarbonize maritime shipping, which largely runs on what they describe as dirty diesel fuel. Teresa Bowie is climate policy director for the group Pacific Environment.
We're asking President Biden to use the Clean Air Act authority to help establish goal-based fuel standards for ships to reduce shipping emission by 100% by 2040.
Opponents in the shipping industry say electrifying ships would carry a big price tag and raise the cost of goods.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Hear us on interesting radio stations on your favorite podcast platform. Find your trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, June 25th. Local early morning temperatures range from 51 degrees in Steventown to 53 over in Medusa. Regional average soil temperature is, you know what, it's fine. Let's just give that one a break for a bit and concentrate more on the air. Pollen levels for today will be medium. Air quality will register as moderate on the air quality index, which means if you are unusually sensitive to particulate pollution, consider reducing your activity level or shorten the amount of time you are active outdoors, which you may be tempted to enjoy today. It gets hot with a high of 88 at 3 p.m., but most of the day will be comfortable because dew points are below 60 degrees and winds should be light but steady. Grab your sunglasses and watch that sun exposure. It'll take some time for clouds to show up this afternoon. Overnight temperatures fall to 65 degrees. Dew points will be close, so it could feel sticky. Tomorrow, light chances of rain all morning before we get a high of 88 at 3 p.m. About that time, storm chances arrive and linger through the night. After a low of 62, the rain ends Thursday morning. Rest of the day should be dry and a little windy. high of 80, happens at 2 p.m. Friday, dry, high of 78. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 12:05 a.m., high tide at 5:49 a.m., low tide again at 12:53 p.m., then high tide once again at 6:38 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 78 degrees and the tide strength will be high. For the paddlers out there, that means that ebb tide can travel as fast as 3 to 4 miles per hour in the channel. During flood tide, you're talking 1 to 3 miles per hour, if you don't account for wind. Now, these are general observations. Individual experience may vary. Sunset today will be at 8:21 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:17 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 5%. Plasma winds will be slow at 321 kilometers per second with a thin density of 3 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently pretty lame till dark, okay below 14 megahertz afterward. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 141. And this has been The Better Weather for Tuesday, June 25th. Brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
We'll be right back.
2022 new music there from Chris Forsythe from Philadelphia. The song is called Bad Moon Risen. That was 2022 new music from Lucretia Dalt. The song was called Atemporal on the radio at 90.7 FM, WGXC.
Hey man, I saw your Volkswagen thing from across the street while I was getting a rhubarb smoothie. Oh yeah, these smoothies are great. They're loaded with important phytochemicals to combat the free radicals floating around in your body, causing you to make bad decisions. Like buying that Volkswagen thing. Oh, good burn, man. You seem really cool. Yeah, I guess you could say I've been dulling the cutting edge for years. So I was wondering if you could tell me where the raddest swimming spots are. Me and my girlfriend Olestra burning up in this man-made heat dome. Oh, rad, man. Yeah, me and my girlfriend Topiary, we're just gonna head over there. Oh, snap, my man. What are the GPs? That's like a way of saying GPS without really saying it. Well, we could tell you the DDs, but then we would have to kill you. Oh, hilarious, Pierce Brosnan. No, seriously, we would stuff you in the trunk of our 1968 Toyota Land Cruiser, and you would probably suffocate, and then you would be unable to swim. Massive bummer. Well, would you have the 411 on a poorly ventilated pavilion with a band playing awkward versions of old Southern rock songs? My dude, I have just the spot for you. Battlefield Earth, every Tuesday night at 10 p.m., only on WGXC and WGXC.org.
Hi, and welcome back to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. I'm Teresa Golden.
And I'm Jean Thomas.
Today's chat is about more catalog buying. On an earlier episode, we reviewed the realities of buying seeds from catalogs and discovered that there was a whole other world of catalogs specializing in flowering bulbs and in nursery stock. Perennial plants also appear in many catalogs. So, Jean, why do we need another whole episode about bulb and plant buying? Isn't a catalog a catalog? What's the difference?
Well, one of the biggest differences is price. A packet of seed is a few dollars and has great potential. Your major investment is your time to bring all that potential to fruition. There's usually a much bigger cash investment in bulbs and plants. Also, there's usually a bigger investment in space and time. So if you don't read a catalog accurately, your mistakes will be on a much larger scale.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. Let's start with trees and shrubs. I'm always amazed at what I call the magic beans product. My favorites are the multi-fruit or multi-flowering trees. You can get a fruit cocktail tree. It's an assortment of peaches, nectarines, plums, and apricots grafted onto one trunk. Or a 3-in-1 butterfly bush, or a 5-in-1 pear tree. This is where you'd better read the small print. If you're an experienced gardener, these can be a fun novelty. If they survive, you have bragging rights. An inexperienced gardener might be discouraged for life. These plants are usually small, bare root twigs, and the shipping costs can be prohibitive. Usually, the first thing I look for is the chart of shipping and handling costs, usually listed on the order form. Spending an extra $10 or more on a gamble can be painful. I recommend that rookies use a technique I've perfected. Shop through a catalog, make your list of plants and prices and shipping costs, put the list inside the catalog and set it aside. Go back another day and look at your list. This time check to see what zone the plant is hardy to, what's the actual size of the plant being shipped. Look up the mature size of the plant so you can reserve the space in your yard, and the requirements for light, water, and, in our area, deer protection. If you still want the order, go for it. If you're having second thoughts, maybe a trip to a local garden center might be in order. My motto about woody plants in particular is, time is money. This translates to, would you rather buy a bare root, 2-foot-tall baby tree and nurse it along, or would you rather spend twice or three times as much for one that's several years older and proportionately bigger? The bigger one has received all the TLC from the nursery growers that you'd be providing the baby tree. I'm at an age where I'd rather not wait a few extra years, but there are good reasons for each school of thought.
Okay, sticking with woody plants for now, when is it better to buy from a catalog?
Well, if you want to plant a significant number of plants and you can protect them to adulthood, for instance, many of the fast-growing hedge favorites, such as lilac and rose of Sharon, or oak and maple varieties could be bought in multiples. There are several catalogs that offer hardwoods and conifers in plugs from a single plant to a box of hundreds for forest buildings or restoration. Chief River Nursery Company was established in 1973 and offers a large range of native trees and shrubs, as well as an assortment of bare root fruit trees.
But aren't a lot of the plants offered in catalogs problematic?
Yes, they are. Many, such as burning bush, Siberian elm, and non-native honeysuckles, are prohibited in New York State. The catalog will have a notation at the end of the plant description listing states that don't allow these plants to be shipped in. I'm also wary of forsythia, mock orange, and butterfly bush because they can be aggressive and muscle their way into larger spaces than you might like. And I'll argue about rose of Sharon until the cows come home and maybe let the cows eat the darn things.
Well, no opinions there. Let's move on to herbaceous plants, herbs and perennials.
Okay, that's a kinder and gentler world. Perennial herbs are included in most perennial catalogs, and you can go from as simple as a favorite collection of parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme to plant in a container outside your kitchen to a collection of salvias or a border of catmints. The live plants may be small at first, but they do grow quickly and fill up space for you. They're usually shipped in a 3-inch pot, and the packaging is amazing.
What about perennials? As a master gardener, I'm an enthusiast about native plants and pollinators.
Well, perennial flower, and don't forget grass, starter plants are not for weekend gardeners. Like any babies, they need a little more attention at first. Just like seed catalogs, the best plant catalogs give copious information about the requirements of the plant. There are many specialty catalogs available for perennials, and I must say the information provided for the plants is exemplary. These people want their plants to be successful and do their best to make them foolproof. Prairie Moon Nursery in Minnesota is celebrating its 40th year in business, and the title on the catalog says it all. Native Seeds and Plants for Gardening and Restoration. I'm still trying to get my head around how 1982 was 40 years ago. It doesn't feel that way. Prairie Moon, like many of the catalogs, offers pre-planned gardens designed for specific conditions. Theirs tend to be like little meadows.
And I'm sure there's catalog for more traditional gardens?
Oh, Teresa, absolutely. Bluestone Perennials has been around for 50 years, and their catalog is an oasis of logic. Their plants are listed alphabetically by Latin name and have a full set of guidelines and icons describing what each individual plant needs.
You said Prairie Moon offers collections of plants designed to plant all at once. Who else does that?
Well, a couple of my favorites are Kay Van Bourgondien and Spring Hill. Both tend to stray into hyperbole in their catalogs, but have excellent mixtures and blends available. Van Bourgondien has one I'm going to tell Linda Levitt about.
Linda Levitt, who contributes to the Flower Power segment of the podcast? Why?
They have a Flower Power perennial blend of four really good deer-proof cutting flowers. They must have named it after her, right?
I think we've reached the end of perennials and woody plants. Tell us about buying bulbs from catalogs.
Okay, this comes with a warning. I'm bonkers about bulbs, and I will spend hours comparing prices between catalogs because I order them the only way you should, by the hundreds. I'm going to start with the assumption that our listeners have seen the seasonal retail displays in just about every store that sells plants or food. So I'll remind you of the basic rules. If an occasional dahlia or canna seduces you into bringing it home, be sure the bulb is healthy and has good solidity. If it's shriveled and weightless or mushy, do not adopt it. It cannot be saved at any discount. If it's healthy, go for it. Follow the planting instructions. Buying from a catalog gives you wider choices and less pressure. I feel the pain of somebody who yielded to temptation and brought home a bunch of bulbs and then had to navigate around them, waiting for the chance to do the planting. With mail order, you have several days of warning before you start to procrastinate.
But anyway, I just drove past a yard full of gladiolas. What catalog should I use to order some myself right now while I'm thinking of it? Or should I just go get some at the store so I don't have to wait for delivery?
Teresa, maybe I'm so in love with bulbs because they're so contrary. If you see daffodils flowering, that means you can't buy bulbs to plant. There's some of the spring flowering bulbs that all require planting in the fall so they can develop in the soil over the winter. And you can only buy them in the fall. For what comfort it might be, the catalogs start to arrive pretty early in the summer, so you can order them for delivery in the fall. So that works for gladiolas as well as daffodils.
All right, so I have a catalog. There seems to be two types. One has plant pornography with luscious photos on every page, and the other is all botanical with line drawings sprinkled on the pages.
Yep. The shiny, pretty ones have all of the basic bulbs with lots of varieties of each. Often they'll offer collections of stuff that looks great together and or bloom in sequence to lengthen the season. Van Bourgondien, Dutch Gardens, Breck are among these. They all bring in their bulbs from Holland. Pretty cool, huh? For the snobs and the greedy and the lovers of plant trivia, a catalog like McClure & Zimmerman is an absolute treat. There are many fewer illustrations and much more text. And lots more selections. Don't be afraid to expand your horizon. It can be an adventure. The first page tells you how to read the entries in the catalog. They'll even warn you if something's difficult to grow. All these catalogs don't just sell bulbs. They have corms, rhizomes, and tubers available.
What's the difference?
Well, they're all the basic starter roots from which plants develop. For our purposes, the only difference is that how you plant them will differ. Bulbs and corms must be buried to a specific depth, but rhizomes and tubers need to be shallower in the soil. Read the directions to be safe. For example, an iris or a peony planted too deep will not thrive and probably not even flower.
So what's the deal with those flowers I see in the summer, like lilies and gladiolas and dahlias?
Well, we continue with the timing dilemma. By the time you see the flowers, it's too late to plant. Besides, few of the summer flowering flowers are hardy, so you have to buy them in the spring. All the same catalogs have spring editions, so once you're on a mailing list, you'll get both when you can do your ordering.
So am I understanding this correctly? Plants and trees and shrubs can be ordered from catalogs from spring to fall, but bulbs can only be ordered when they're not flowering?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm adding a list of some catalogs to the reference section of the transcript. It's by no means a complete list, and I'm not saying these are the best. I just happen to use these catalogs more frequently.
Any last advice?
Oh, Teresa, I almost forgot. Size matters. By that I mean you will see what looks like the exact same flower in two different catalogs, but with a wild difference in price. Always look closely in the descriptions. Often you'll find a difference in the size of the bulb, and that presents the determining factor for you. You can get smaller bulbs and let them develop in your garden over time, or get plants and flowers that may be bigger and sturdier.
Well, that's all, folks. No more catalog talk for today. Thanks for listening to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. Until next time, this is Teresa and Jean. Thank you.
In this next segment, we're going to have Hugh Johnson. Hey, Hugh.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great. So we had a heat wave last week. Was it what you expected?
Yeah, it wasn't quite as hot as I expected, but that's because we had more humidity than I expected. And that seems to be the case with these heat waves. We seem to get more humidity, and sometimes that keeps the high temperatures from getting quite as high. But that said, we still, we had our, 3 days in a row over 90, our first 90s of the year. And we did tie a record on the 20th, I believe, or the 9th, or the 19th. We break a overnight low. We smashed a record on the 18th. We had a low of 76 degrees, 5 degrees warmer than the previous record. It was 1 degree shy of the all-time record for June. That was 77, set way back in the 1800s. But we had Burlington, by the way, up in Vermont. They had a low of 80 one night during the heat wave, which smashed or tied their all-time warm low record. So, yeah, there were a lot of records broken up north initially, mid-upper 90s, no hundreds. But then as the heat got pinched south on the weekend, it hit 100 degrees in D.C., very, very hot, and it's still pretty hot down there, although the humidity has dropped. But yeah, it was a nasty heat wave, but I thought it was going to get a little hotter than that. Yeah.
Besides the heat, we had some weird weather with those microbursts. So what's going on?
Yeah, it's funny, Bree. We hadn't really had much severe weather at all, very little. But you know, when all of a sudden that all changed with the heat. And we finally had the heat humidity. We had the air was very buoyant, so we had that going for us. But on Thursday, the National Weather Service issued a watch that did not include Albany, went just north. And I wasn't sure why they did that. There were some storms up there, but of course the big one was down in Albany itself, right in Washington Park. What happened was a storm pulsed up very quickly and within 15 minutes became severe. It basically collapsed. And what I mean by that, all the moisture came out of it, kind of wrung all the moisture out. When it does that, when the precipitation comes down hard, it produces a strong cascade of wind. And that's exactly what happened. It just missed my house, but we drove about a mile or two east that night. I couldn't believe the difference in damage between our house and where we went towards Washington Park that night. And I think 14,000 people without power, maybe it was even higher than that. There was an actual brick building that was damaged beyond repair, I think, and there were other structural. The National Weather Service estimated winds of 75 miles an hour. I wouldn't be surprised if they were higher than that, but it was a very concentrated area. Yeah, it was really nasty, that's for sure.
Yeah, I have a friend who lives on Western Ave, right across from the park, and she said it took a tree down in her backyard and didn't even blow things off her front porch.
Yeah, that's how these things work. They can, it's like tornadoes. They can destroy one area and leave another untouched. That's exactly how these work.
And you've mentioned a tornado, Hugh. So, and on Sunday we were in the tornado watch, and there was talk of widespread severe weather event. Did that pan out?
Not really. I mean, it was not widespread. It was maybe moderate. There were areas down in Dutchess County that were hit pretty hard by severe thunderstorms, Mohawk Valley and Vermont. There was a tornado in Connecticut on the Friday, the night after the microburst, but that was on a Friday. That was down in Harrington, Connecticut, in Litchfield County, which is part of National Weather Service Albany's County Warning Area. But no tornadoes were actually verified during the watch on Sunday. It was interesting because there were a few cells that did absolutely look tornadic. They had what we call gate to gate. They had strong velocity signatures that anyone would have put out a tornado warning. But apparently, and there were pictures of funnels not reaching the ground, actually west of our area. But what happened, what saved us from having a widespread event, was our lapse rates, which again is nothing more than the difference in temperature between as you go higher in the atmosphere, were not all that steep. And that was partially because we got into a maritime marine layer that kind of dampened the whole thing. And, you know, if you remember, Sunday morning was cloudy and we really didn't lose the clouds that much during the day. So the temperatures didn't get quite as high and we didn't get those lapse rates, but we had a very strong shear. We had the winds turning with height, pretty strong. and we certainly had a lot of fuel to work with. So this could have been a huge outbreak. It was a deep low pressure moving through. But again, that weakened lapse rate saved the day and prevented us from having a lot of storms that we would have become a lot stronger. I remember we had a storm go through here and it was pretty generic. So we kind of lucked out. But again, it's complicated with severe weather. A lot of times it's just one factor that can make the difference between having severe weather or not. It's pretty complicated.
One of those factors you just mentioned is something I haven't heard before. Maritime marine layer. We're nowhere near an ocean.
No, we're not. But what we get is we get a southeast wind up the Hudson Valley. It happens all the time. It kind of socks in the air, kind of funnels up from the ocean toward in the Hudson Valley. It's not certainly not as cool as it would be near the coast, but it kind of still keeps that maritime characteristic. And we've seen that, you get the stratus and it kind of keeps us from, it happens time and time again that it kind of sometimes saves us from having really bad severe outbreaks.
We've talked about heat waves and microbursts and tornadoes as well, which are all forms of extreme weather. And I'm wondering, how have extreme weather events been changing with the progression of climate change?
Well, I think what we're seeing, we're certainly seeing more tornadoes further east than used to be in the tornado alley. We're seeing more flooding. There was all kinds of flooding out in the Midwest. Unfortunately, we didn't get that involved in that. But so we're seeing more flooding, probably more severe thunderstorms, tornadoes going up a little bit here, probably more as you go further south towards Maryland. So those are all things that I think that have changed as climate changes. More precipitation, more fuel in the atmosphere to work with. That's the main key. Yeah.
So we've talked about the big things. What about the, what's your forecast for this week? Does it stay crazy or does it mellow out?
It mellows out. We cooled off today, obviously, with some showers. Tomorrow, perhaps one of the nicest days of the week will be mid upper 80s with no humidity. So it should be a pretty decent day. Unfortunately, Wednesday, we got at least the possibility of showers and maybe some severe weather. Although the best threat of that might be south and east, but we are definitely have the possibility of that. And then we cool it off again Thursday and Friday. And then the weekend looks a little unsettled right now, but I don't see any heat waves in the next week to 10 days. Temperatures averaging probably near normal, believe it or not. Something that we haven't seen too much of. So not as crazy as a week coming up, except for possibly Wednesday afternoon.
Thanks so much, Hugh, for talking with us about the intense weather from last week and for also giving us an idea of what to expect from the weather this week. It's been a pleasure, Hugh.
All right, Lennox, you too. And Bria, you have a wonderful night. All right, take care. Bye-bye.
When I was young, I'd listen to the radio, waiting for my favorite songs. When they played, I'd sing along. It made me smile. Those were such happy times, and not so long ago. How I wondered where they'd gone. But they're back again, just like a long lost friend. All the songs I love so well. Every sha-la-la-la, every woe-woe still shines. Every shingle so fine. When they get to the part where he's breaking her heart, it can really make me cry, just like before. It's yesterday once more. Has changed.
It was songs of love that I would sing to them, and I'd memorize each word. Those old melodies still sound so good to me as they melt the years away. Every sha-la-la-la, every whoa-whoa still shines.
All these good goodies,
every shingling-a-ling-a-ling that they're starting to sing. Yesterday once more.
Show me love.